So we're talking with Sam Moranto, 14 years as the state director for Illinois MUFON, talking about the uptick in Midwest UFO sightings. Also, TJ Japcon, who recorded the famous Tinley Park episode, which you can find out more about if you go to coasttocoastam.com and see that trio of color-shifting orbs. They appear to be connected. And it slid across the horizon, and as Sam was saying, pretty much across the world. But that's just one. We'll talk more about the Rockford case, the mass sighting there, and then we'll take your calls for these gentlemen at the bottom of the hour and open lines an hour from now on Coast to Coast AM. And for George Norrie, this is Ian Punnett. So much enjoyed our conversation so far, Sam and TJ talking about Midwest UFO sightings. And Sam, you made a reference to a concert where there had been a mass sighting recently. Can you tell us a little more about that?
Yes, it was a heavy metal concert, I believe is what it was.
Amen.
down in southern Illinois, and the report came in. The gentleman that made report was very astute. He really gave a tremendous amount of detail, and he has a background in photography. So when he was analyzing the footage and what he was actually seeing, he was very detailed. He lives in Arkansas, but he traveled to out here to the concert. It's still under investigation. And I tell you what, once we do have that together, maybe we get a portion of that footage and the synopsis of the actual episode to you, and you could talk about that then.
Yeah, I'd love to. And I want to know who's playing.
Exactly. That's what I asked him, too.
I'm serious. I love a good heavy metal concert. Been too long. I used to be in a thrash metal band many years ago, but that's a subject for another night. So we don't have enough yet on that, but we'll get an update. Tell us about the Rockford case. And okay. TJ, too, you can jump in anywhere you want on any of these stories as well.
Oh, one thing I did have to add first, TJ. TJ actually recorded two of the three nights, which was August 21st, and then the Halloween sighting of 2004. Again, there was a sighting then September the 1st, the next year, going into October. In other words, it was a late evening going into summers around 2 o'clock the next morning of 2005. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you did. The Halloween sighting, that's the Tinley Park?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, good.
It was great. That was a very, very big sight. Very big.
What about Rockford?
And multiple objects.
Yeah, talk about Rockford, though. I'm curious because I've been out to Rockford a few times, and I have a good friend who lives out there, Zim, if you're listening. But what was that about?
It was on New Year's evening, going into the morning of New Year's Day, that I believe it was 12 illuminations were seen floating over the pretty much a similar concept or configurations of divisible by three and patterns of triangles. And this would have been in Love's Park. It was the first report that came in, and it was the orange orbs, which were commonplace and associated with these triangular objects. And then the people at the park, there was a big event going on, they started recording them with their video cameras. And, of course, this is a period of time where finally we have multiple types of cameras, everything from high 8 to various digital formats out there, that people had consumer-grade video cameras. So we were starting to get video footage. And so Peter Davenport at New Fork, by the way, Peter Davenport is the gentleman who received most of these, especially the Tinley Park, even O'Hare and Southern Illinois, the mass sighting that came right after the O'Hare sighting. Rockford sighting. So the Rockford sightings started on New Year's Eve and actually went into 2001, and there were 13 dates of sightings. sightings. Not all of them were, we consider to be genuine sightings. There were some hoaxing going on afterwards. But all the way to 2001, we had mass sightings up in Rockford. Now, of course, and I have to say this, that after that, we had the mass sightings down in southern Illinois with the police officers chasing.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah, that's gotten a lot of play over the years on TV, especially.
Oh, yeah. There was many documentaries.
Right.
In fact, when I was working with UFO Hunters, we did it for UFO Hunters.
Right.
We did that as an episode. And Dave Marler, who was the state director at that time, wrote a book on triangular UFOs, an estimate of the situation. And he was the one investigating it down there. That object was seen not just in Illinois, but into Missouri. And you mentioned Margie Kay.
Yeah.
We have a mutual witness that was a assistant chief of the fire department. And he followed the object into Missouri, where he was with some police officer, and it was directly over him. And by the way, that wasn't one object. It was at least three different objects, a rectangular object, an isosceles triangle, and an equilateral triangle.
I love that. Yeah, it is neat. And I think that idea of the triangular formation is something that it seems like, and I don't know whether this is just an impression, but it seems like we're hearing more and more about, or people are reporting that in that context of the triangular. Sometimes you could say, well, that so easily must be a plane with two wing lights and a tail light passing through clouds or something. But that's not actually what people are reporting for the most part.
No, they're seeing far more detail, and TJ can tell you. They were seeing the actual structure, especially further away. Let's say, for instance, there was there's a tweeter center back there. That's what it was called. Now it's the Midwest Center for Concerts in Tinley Park. Now I'm going back to Tinley Park. If you were back there looking towards Tinley, in other words, looking north of I-80, you had less light pollution back there. People
right.
were able to discern something in between the lights, structure in between the lights. And for those individuals directly below it, they were seeing all sorts of patterns of arcing blue light through across the body. And a gentleman, in fact, called me from Rib. He was up in Wisconsin and seen one of these objects very close over Rib Mountain. And he used the term, the skin of the object did undulate. It looked like undulating like an eel. That's why
right.
I found that interesting when your wife and son mentioned that. So, yes, there was structure being seen. It really depends on your perspective and vantage point. And TJ can tell you more about the colors and some of the people directly underneath it who had seen the various colors swirling inside the area of illuminations.
Well, yeah, so tell me about that, TJ. What testimony did you recover on that?
Just like when you zoomed in with the camcorder, you can definitely see the colors just going from red to blue to green, white, and they just rotated, but it wasn't in a random pattern. It was just all over the place as far as how they came from the back and went to the front. And I mean, you can see it if you played the tape in slow motion. You could definitely pick out those colors as they rotated. And again, there's just no random. It's not random at all. It's just
right.
just all over the place. We had a meeting at the Orland Library of those people that wanted to come forward and talk about it. It was one individual who happened to be on Oak Park Avenue in Tinley Park, and that would have been southeast of where I was, and he was literally directly under it. And he said when it got over that way, he could definitely see the lights rotating, and that was without a help of a camera. That was just that what he saw. There was other people that came forward and saying that, you know, they heard stuff on their baby monitor, which was kind of crazy.
Oh yeah.
And there was one girl that happened to be That would have been west of us, actually almost directly west of us, near Andrews High School. And back then, I don't think anyone has a Nextel phone anymore, but some of the Nextel phones went dead at that time, and then they turned back on as this thing shifted further to the east.
Yikes.
Nothing happened to us and so forth, but this was just one witness that happened to say that. And we're like, okay, that's kind of strange. But I would probably believe the baby monitors more than anything else, because again, when we heard no sound at all. That thing was as silent can be. And if it were just one, if it was one ship, that thing's pretty massive. It definitely wasn't a helicopter. It's funny how your mind, from the distance, you know, you're thinking, okay, these are just lights, but as it gets closer, your brain starts to analyze things a lot quicker, and it starts to pick out what it's not.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to describe it. Yeah,
and then you're just figuring out, okay, well, it's not these kind of things above. So really, what is it? And your mind is just a blank because you just can't figure it out. So you know it's not a plane. You know it wasn't a helicopter because helicopters make noise.
Right.
You know it's not flares because you'd see some kind of residual drippings from.
Sure.
A player that is a good example is the what is it, the Chinese lanterns?
Yeah,
you know, those things, you'd see it wave back and forth in the wind, etc. So we know that you could count that out, and you're left to believe that you just don't know what it is, and it's exactly what we thought it was. It's unidentified, because we still to this day can't figure out what the heck we saw.
Yeah, you know, I think this is really interesting because the operative word, I think, for me is yaw. If it's a flare, if it's a helicopter even, if it's a boat, there is inevitably some level of yaw, some rotation of movement, right, that you can tell that it gives, it shows that it's, even if it's just a variation slightly along the line, because a flare would have, like anything, like a trajectory, a human-made trajectory, even our own spaceships have yaw when they take off, and you can see it as they shimmer, as they, you know, are fighting against the atmosphere to get into space. So, yeah, the fact that none of that exists, that would be one of those things that, and it was, in fact, in the formation that I saw, it was one of those things that clicked off, was these things are like laser lights. They're not showing any variation whatsoever. And that just atmospherically just seemed impossible. And I believe it fairly was. If you're just tuning in, you're hearing conversation. We'll take some calls coming up for TJ Japcon and Sam Maranto. They're both from Illinois. Sam is the state director for Illinois MUFON, and we're talking about the increase in Midwest UFO sightings, especially around the Chicago area. Last hour, I had my wife and my son on, who saw something when my wife Marjorie was up visiting my son a couple of weeks ago. We were all together. I had to leave early to come back to teach, and she stayed back for a couple of days, and she was glad she did because they saw this amazing thing from the eighth floor pool of his apartment building outside. And then TJ is also in the Chicago area, and they both have glorious Chicago accents, I have to say, because I grew up in there. I never picked one up, and whenever I hear it, it just sounds like home. I'm just like, it's a beautiful thing. My nephew says gaysk mask when he's talking about it, and I make him say it like 20 times because I just love how that sounds. Cracks me up. And so we'll get to your calls coming up in just a minute too, and then open lines after that. You know, you mentioned about the idea of light pollution, and I wonder whether that can help explain the proliferation of Midwest sightings, because outside of areas like Chicago, St. Louis, Kansas City, you still have a lot of people. You have a dense population in this corridor that comes, you know, from the Twin Cities and Milwaukee, and then straight all the way down in the Midwest. You have a lot of people in this area along the Mississippi and around the Great Lakes. But when you get outside of those major cities, you don't have a lot of light pollution. And I wonder whether it's that, how those two things converge, that would give you more people to see something and less light, man-made light, to interfere with what they were seeing. What do you all think about that?
Well, I think if you're at the outskirts on the boundary of a like a Tinley Park or Chicago, you're able to get the illumination underneath something and giving you a better focus of structure, if there is structure between, like, for instance, the triangular objects, because they camouflage themselves very well. Now, if you're directly underneath it, it doesn't really help you all that much. In fact, it actually diffuses because of the pollution in general.
Right.
And the end result is you have your vision's skewed. So it's the best way to see something like that is on the periphery. And strange thing about these large triangular objects, they always are on the periphery of very large municipalities. That's where they appear.
TJ, you have a thought on that?
Yeah, it's, you know, Sam, correct me if I'm wrong, but what would you say the percentages of, if you're in the downtown area, that you would see over the lake of something that you just can't? The pattern in the Midway Airport is you're going to come through, like, just over Gary and then into Midway Airport. Might be the same for O'Hare, maybe just a little bit further north as they enter into O'Hare Airspace Airport. If your flight's basically coming, well, it doesn't matter. It really matter. It just depends on what the way the wind's blowing too, how they're going to land. But it seems like in the past years, there's been more reports that I can think of people that witness it literally over the lake than it would be, like, let's say, above the city. Sam?
Yeah.
And I don't know why, but obviously, you know, there's no buildings over the lake. The pollution is probably non-existent, really.
Yeah.
If you're looking, because there's no air emissions, ours, exhaust. And I think you get a better perspective of if there is something over Lake Michigan, and you just got to decipher it. Is it an airplane that comes into the normal pattern, or is it something unusual? Like with the UFO.
Yeah,
I think the percentage is a little higher now than it has been in the past, maybe because people report it now and they're willing to report it compared to 10, 20 years ago. That's how I would interpret that also.
Yeah, you know, I'll jump in and say that I grew up in Winnetka, and about just a couple blocks down from the Home Alone house. But at the end of my street was the lake. And so we used to always go down and kind of sit on the stairs that would go down to the beach. And that's where I saw a formation back in 1978. And it was right over Lake Michigan, but very low. And when it moved south along the horizon line closer to Chicago, you could actually see the line of light pollution coming from the city. And it ended somewhere around Evanston or Wilmette, if you look at it on a map. And then that's where, you know, that's where the light pollution was. And then after that, other than that area, it was all, you know, it was all darkness. And it gave a great contrast to the lights that we were seeing. Well, okay. So here are your two Illinois MUFON investigators. Where are you with this? We'll take calls coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. All right, so heading into this half hour, we'll take calls for TJ and for Sam with Illinois MUFON, and then we'll get to open line calls coming up after the top of the hour. I sure look forward to hearing what you have coming up on Saturday night on Coast to Coast. In the first hour, we'll get an update on the Mothman prophecies. Love that story. And the investigator is somebody with a very high pedigree. We'll tell you more about that coming up tomorrow night. And then we'll be talking with a descendant of Lizzie Borden and the curse of Lizzie Borden, both in the house and on the family. Could it have predated Lizzie herself? That will be tomorrow night. It's a part of a upcoming show on Discovery Plus, The Curse of Lizzie Borden, with our old friend Dave Schrader as the host. You're not going to want to miss tomorrow night because that guy is terrific and the story is chilling. But it's that time of year. If it's not chilling just because the temperatures are getting colder, it's because we're getting closer to Halloween. On Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. Sam Maranto, State Director for Illinois MUFON, and TJ Japcon, who recorded the famous Tinley Park incident. You can find out more about that at coasttocoastam.com. Just look at the carousel. And we sure wish we had more video, more photos. What I like most about what Sam said in the first hour, which you can go back and listen to if you're a Coast Insider at any time, or maybe you're local affiliate replays that first hour, is that, you know, as a MUFON investigator, his first obligation is to find an earthly explanation. And so one of those stories, which got a lot of play earlier this week about this sort of wishbone-shaped UFO, may in fact be a collapsed weather balloon of some sort or some type of Mylar creation. Don't know yet, but that's how you got to do it. You got to treat this seriously. Not just everything that comes in must be part of some giant alien invasion. Although I want to ask you, Sam, what is your personal theory about the origin of all of these sightings?
It's a multiplicity of phenomena. We have I've had my own experiences starting in 1959. When I evaluate things, I have to be far more critical than normally anybody else, you know, because I have a predisposition otherwise.
Yeah.
So I think we are dealing with everything from interdimensional, extra-dimensional, to, of course, extraterrestrial. There's also advanced pieces of technology out there that are in the hands of certain contractors or individuals. And we are not privy to all that information. There are also things that may be innate to our nature, our world that we live in, that we just can't perceive properly. Maybe we need to have the right environment, substrate, or whatever, for it to materialize or become relevant. So I think, again, it goes back to a multiplicity of phenomena, and the phenomena is genuine, and it's not just one thing.
How about you, TJ?
I'm going to follow the line right there with Sam, too. I mean, I just what we see and what we perceive, a lot of them we can figure out, yeah, they're it's a hoax, it's fake for whatever reason. Some kids decide to play a joke on humanity. But that top percent, you just don't know. And you don't know if it's military, if it's from another universe, etc. That's what kind of keeps it elusive as far as what a UFO is. It's obviously it's just unidentified. You could elaborate and you could kind of narrow it down to, okay, it came from outer space, it came from their alien, definitely, and so forth. But you just don't know. That's like the key question for the entire human race, yeah. I guess, is
right.
Are they out there? I'd like to say that because I think it's very naive that we're just the only people here in a vast universe of stars and galaxies. If you want to go into Carl Sagan, that would be wonderful.
Right. Billions and billions.
But it's just very naive to think that we're the only ones out here. I'm sure that we have been visited plenty of times thousands of years ago, you know, and they're still visiting. I think I heard on one show a long time ago that we're basically renting. This is not our playground. So take it for what it is. I think that was, gosh, it was on one of the shows. yeah. that I watched years ago. But you know, we're just here and to see how things go, etc.
We're just renting Earth for weddings and bar mitzvahs.
Yes, exactly.
You know, I think that's interesting, and I never know either exactly how to categorize that. I thought it was interesting when, and I know that, Sam, you were quoted in that Chicago Tribune story earlier this year on the eve or right around the time that the Pentagon released more details about what video had been captured and how they couldn't explain a huge percentage of these UAPs, which they had caught on video, mostly from either from ships or from planes. But I thought what was intriguing was that even the Pentagon was having to say, or it's somebody from, you know, Russia or China, and that they have advanced technologies that we don't know anything about. And that, to me, is the scariest of all of the options, that they've been able to come up with this stuff that we theoretically haven't been able to do ourselves, or we would have, I think, perhaps claimed credit.
I think that's a good point. We never, you know, our intelligence community has a good pulse on everything, but then again, we really don't know.
Yeah.
And the other thing is with that Nimitz strike group encounter, that encounter was November the 14th. And it just so happens that Kevin Day stated that on the Princeton, they started to paint them on the radar, on the Aegis Spy 1 radar system, 2 weeks prior. That would bring us to October 31st, the time that we were getting the sightings in Tinley Park on Halloween. How do you like that?
Let me grab Patrick from Sebring, Florida on Coast to Coast AM because he's got a thought. He's from the Tinley Park area. Is that right, Patrick?
Yes, I just moved down here about 3 or 4 months ago.
Were you there for the famous Tinley Park video that we talked about earlier?
Yes, I was. I lived there all my life. I'm in my 60s now. And I missed the event, but I did hear about it. I heard about it on Coast to Coast. And, you know, a few days after. But there was one incident that I recall probably, I think it's either from 2008 or 2009. I was driving from Chicago Heights north on Interstate 394 to intersect with 294 to go back home. And I'm very familiar with the horizon there and on either side of the highway. And I noticed something new about halfway up from Chicago Heights to where it intersects into 294. And as I saw it, I thought maybe they were putting up a new tower or something, but it was something large, and it was very dark. This was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And as I got closer, I could see much more detail, and when I got to the overpass over 294, I wanted so much to stop and take pictures, but I was afraid I was going to get hit by another car.
Yeah, really?
But it was from that interchange of 294 and 394. It was probably just east of that interchange by about a quarter of a mile. And it was about, to me, it seemed like it was about 500 feet above the interstate. And it was hovering over 294. And it was about the size of an extremely large barge. It had square edges to it. It was dark in color. I was awestruck. It was just amazing to see it. And I couldn't see any wires. I thought maybe if it was like a balloon or something.
Something getting pulled by a plane or something, yeah.
No, it was steady. It was hovering. And it was unbelievable. It was huge.
All right. Well, hang on a second. Let's get stay right there. But let's get TJ and Sam on that. Here's another Chicago area sighting. Do you know about this one?
No.
I've heard
of that. Did that emanate any light?
I did not see any lights. This was about, like I said, 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Okay.
It was like around the beginning of fall.
So
and
still bright.
It was huge.
Gentlemen?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
The rectangular ones are popular, too. I mean, they've been seen. But didn't we have something like that around that time period, TJ? I think we had a report or something like that.
Yeah, well, I remember driving down Oak Park Avenue, and I'm sure you're familiar with that, too.
Oh, yeah.
If you write down 167th Street, and it's a straight shot to I-57.
Mm-hmm.
And my son happened to see something. And I'm like, well, and we actually had binoculars in the car. And he grabbed the binoculars out, and he goes, "Dad, it's a cigar." And I go, "You're kidding me!" And we were at the stoplight, and as we went through the intersection, that's when he had looked at. That's when he had seen it. And we actually drove back around to go back northbound, and we went through the intersection pretty slow. People were pretty mad at us behind me. And sure enough, he said the same thing. He goes, "No, Dad, it's a cigar shape." And we turned right back around, went again another time, and it was gone. Mm. It was gone. And then, again, if you look at cigar shape, from a distance, cigar shape would be like a rectangular also.
Well, yeah. This did not look like a cigar. This was, they had definite square corners. And it was relatively close. I mean, I've seen videos of other UFOs where they're way out in the distance.
Right.
Yeah.
This one, if I drove maybe 2 minutes going east, I would have been right underneath it. It was It was large, very large. I would estimate it to be maybe 200 feet across, and it's. Length was, I would say, at least double that. And it was big.
It was the Borg. well, here I'm going to ask you to do something, which is I'm guessing would be helpful, right? Is if Patrick would make a historic
make a report.
Yeah. Make a report, because it just all goes into the hopper, but it's important in case somebody else, you know, lets them know they've got a reference for that. So please do that while I get to, and do it tonight. Do it before you forget, because that's an important story. And thank you, Patrick. Let's go to Wes, who's in Massachusetts on Coast to Coast AM. Wes?
Hey, how you doing? Good morning. Listen, I believe that these UFOs are around a lot more than anybody's seeing. I believe that they cloak. They cloak out and
Amen.
You can't see them, you know?
Yeah.
Well, my experience is I started having paranormal after my dog passed away. And I would get up every night and start videoing. And I got the dog in the hallway after he had already passed. I have an old-timer from the 1700s looking at me from inside the mirror.
Cool.
But long story short, my experience my question is what do owls have to do with aliens?
Okay.
And here's why I asked you. I got a video and a picture of an owl that was looking in my window. And you know the diameter of a window. Now, the head on this owl was like half the size of the window. And then two nights later, I had this being show up that the head was glowing and it was just looking in my window. And I have the video that shows it. I don't know if it knew I was turning around to look at it or telepathy or anything like that, but it cloaked out in a split second and then showed itself back to me.
Right.
I'd love to share the pictures with you.
I tell you what, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to put you on hold so that you can get information on how to share those pictures. But gentlemen, if you've never done it before, and if you go to a search engine, type in owls and aliens and look at the images. And what Wes is saying is fairly consistent with other reports of people who say that what they saw 1 second was an owl, and the next second when they looked back, it was an alien.
Yes. Michael Cleland, isn't it? Michael Cleland wrote the book on owls and aliens.
Oh, I think he did. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd never spoken to him myself, but yeah. Owls, yeah. Aliens, and synchronicity, right?
Yes.
Right.
And synchronicities, by the way, synchronicity is part of the intense research that we've done with the Chicago Mothman scenario.
Right.
Very unusual, bizarre things. In fact, I think Dr. Bill Kay will be on
tomorrow night. Sometime.
Yes, tomorrow night.
There's a Chicago Mothman?
There was a series of sightings. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but some of it is nonsense, but even in the nonsense and the noise, there was a message.
All right.
That's part of the research that we've been doing. Very interesting.
Let me get Ed here before we go. We're talking with Sam Aranto and with TJ Jepcon, who are both with Illinois MUFON, working together to help us understand better the uptick in Midwest sightings tonight. Ed?
Hi there.
We have just enough time for you if you can keep it short.
I'll try to keep real quick. TJ, thank you. Sam, thank you. This is a story from – I was a traffic control of a Ryder truck rental, and we used to send trucks all over the country, really, but mostly New England. And every now and then we'd get a cluster of them stuck up in northern New England, and we'd have to send like a travel bus up. I'd be driving, take friends up and take the trucks back to Boston.
Okay.
And there was one, and actually it's shorter end of that end, and I'll be quick with the other end. As we came back, it was always friends of mine. I'd pay them to, do a little work and have fun.
All right. We're going to have to get to the story short, so go ahead.
Okay.
Real quick.
On the way back from Maine, way up Maine in 95, we encountered, it looked like a necklace in the sky, a necklace of lights.
Oh, yeah.
And there was no formation of it. There was no, arrow shape. It was just like, he pulled up to me, one of the trucks, and just pointed up to the sky, Very unusual.
Right.
I've heard of these lights before, but we've seen it in person, and it was real,
Okay, hang on to that thought, because as I said, we're running out of time, but necklace would bring us full circle back to the story that my son and my wife told in the first hour. A necklace would be a good way to describe what they saw, too. But Sam, TJ, and in 30 seconds each, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, it depends on how high and when it was. Well, the most common sightings we see of a string of lights are the Starlink satellite. And I had closed out 35 reports just in a short period last year. They're very frequent, and they are in a straight line of illuminations. And they could be as many as 60 of them.
Okay.
I've seen those too.
Yes.
You all were wonderful. I hope you had a good time.
Oh, absolutely.
Excellent time. Excellent.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, thanks for coming on with such short notice and helping us better understand both the Midwest sightings, and our friend Margie Kay is talking about this week in a symposium about the ones around Kansas City, but also specifically around Chicago. You all were delightful. Can't wait to have you back on again. Give me an update on that concert. And we'll get you in as soon as you got it, coming up on a future Coast to Coast show. And go Bears in the meantime. Coming up after the top of the hour, we'll give you all the numbers you need to join us for Open Lines. And then tomorrow night, Mothman in the first hour, Lizzie Borden the rest of the show on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett.